This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, who's just back from the Indo-Pacific. Gregory, I report to you that Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister of Russia, recently attended the Gulf Cooperation Council meeting in the Middle East, chaired by Riyadh, of course, the kingdom, and made an appeal to the GCC for what Russia and the GCC have in common, which is a high price of oil, and that Russia's ready to sell food to the Middle East during this concern about severe drought through the Indo-Pacific, and also the famine caused by the disruption of the war. It reminded me that India also has remained neutral in Ukraine conflict, as has the GCC. They've not participated in the sanctions against Russia in any fashion, to my knowledge. And much of this Indo-Pacific region, all the states, are not speaking out condemning Russia. Is Russia making a new way for itself in the Indo-Pacific? Are they exploring? We've talked about China in the Indo-Pacific, but what about Moscow?
Moscow has been very interested in the Indo-Pacific historically, and this, none of this has changed. It's been making great strides, not just in India, for example, with its military programs with the Indian Armed Forces, but also in Indonesia, where it's had extensive barter and counter-trade agreements for the sale of Russian aircraft, military aircraft, particularly in exchange for Indonesian products, timber products mainly. So that's going to continue. The Indo-Pacific countries, such as Sri Lanka, Indonesia, and the like, are all desperately in need of the fertilizer exports from Russia and in the past from Ukraine as well. So they have a really short-term, immediate, existential need to not support the United States' call for sanctions against Russia. They say, look, you know, it's all very well for you to do that, but you know, our livelihood depends on it. And we saw with Sri Lanka, for example, although it wasn't caused by either China or Russia, that the domestic political move to avoid the importation of chemical fertilizers led to the collapse of the entire economy of Sri Lanka. So, now, okay, Sri Lanka has reversed that and is trying to import chemical fertilizers again. But the reality is that the rest of the world is aware of this need for this trade with Russia and Ukraine to maintain their stability and their economic health. So there's a great call for Russia to be present in the Indo-Pacific. Now, we've seen successive Australian governments being very hostile to Russian expansion into the Indo-Pacific. And my visit to Australia to monitor the elections, by the way, not just in Perth, but also in the eastern states as well, it was highly visible there that Russia is regarded now as an ally of the People's Republic of China and therefore would be continue to be resisted in the Indo-Pacific. The fact is that a lot of the region, Australia in particular, New Zealand, have resisted Russia historically for the last 200 years, actually. So it's not just about this current crisis. The Russians are trying to overcome that to a large degree, but they are not putting the major resources into it. They will have to now because their exports are going to largely come out of places like Vladivostok in the Pacific. So the Pacific is going to take a new centrality in the thinking of Moscow.
This summer, we have energy crisis, we have famine. Is there a timeline that makes sense to you now to ending the active violence on the frontier of Donbass and moving to diplomacy?
Yes, I think we are in the beginning of the end right now. It will continue in various ways and in a messy form over the coming months and even the coming years. The reality is that there'll be continued supply of Western weapons and for the next few months into the Ukraine, which will, if you like, artificially prolong the fighting. But I think we're going to see a resolution in Donbass within maybe 30 days from now. We will see the Biden administration continue to raise the whole conflict situation and anti-Russian rhetoric right through to the midterm elections in November this year. But that's really in defiance of the reality that that the war is winding down, that it's getting less public attention, is actually no longer the great strategic threat which most people in Western Europe and North America believe.
This would explain a headline in the New York Times that caught my attention, talking about the allies of the U.S. growing restless with Ukraine.
Absolutely. Not only getting restless, but getting impatient in many respects. The consequences for the food supplies to even Egypt or Indonesia or other parts of the world, the supply of energy to Western Europe, these are urgent issues which have to be addressed, and they cannot be addressed if the West persists in declaring this to be a state of war. So I think what we're going to see is that despite President Zelensky in Ukraine wanting to continue the fighting, even when it's no longer effective, the reality is that the reconstruction of the Donbass, for example, should begin later this year. The restoration of formal supplies of energy around the world and foodstuffs, grains and fertilizers and so on, should be resuming within the coming months. And this, even now, the Biden administration is secretly telling companies that they should be acquiring Russian fertilizer and the like for shipment around the world, and including to the United States. So there's a contradiction in the public comments and the behind-the-scenes reality, the urgency of restoring a sense of normalcy as quickly as possible, and that will be this year.
Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs. I'm John Nash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.